Was that ant that stood up to me?
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh, one ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss, they're puny.
Hmm, puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
seven, six, five, four, three, two, one, zero. Blast off!
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends.
You got a laptop.
Ooh, you got a laptop. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends.
You got a laptop. There it is. You got a laptop.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office, and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, I can understand why it is that those who fail to get a decent education would, fall for the lies and the craziness in this world. But it just never ceases to amaze me how the most intelligent, highly educated, supposed brainiacs of the world can be so easily deceived and manipulated and basically fall for the scam. How somebody could spend so much time learning science and physics and just be so incredibly naive, so gullible. But, you know, hey, that's the world we live in, and that's why mad science exists. So to all of those highly educated people out there and all the mainstream scientists of the world, I'd like to say to you and all the folks listening in and the folks around the world, the joke is on you. Fossil fuel's a lie. And I'm fixing to show it. You know, it just, you ain't never, ever, ever going to see a day when you run out of what they like to call fossil fuel, a.k.a. dinosaur fuel. And the crazy thing about it is, you know, it wasn't even, you know, it wasn't even dinosaurs per se. I mean, dinosaurs are basically biological carbon-based entities with the same chemistry as fish and birds and people and all that kind of stuff, all different types of animals, all animals for that matter. Everything out there is a carbon-based life form. And the funny thing about all it is that all the life forms on the world out there as far as people and animals is just a tiny fraction of what the ultimate thing is that actually produces crude oil. I mean, you're talking about planktons and algaes and all different types of little microorganisms doing their thing. And when you understand, you know, a little bit about science and physics and mechanics, and you paid attention in science class, and you really sit back and you look at everything, you get the big picture, and you watch, and you're listening to everybody talk, and listen to all the doom and gloomers talking about, you know, climate change, climate disruption, and global warming, or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up. And it becomes beyond ridiculous. You know, the joke is on you, folks. It literally is. Every time you go to the gas station, the joke is on you. You think that all these different, you know, things that people have been telling you all these years are true, and all this is, you know, we got all this fuel because of dinosaurs, and it's going to run out one day. Well, the fact of the matter is, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you will never, ever, ever see a time when there is what they call no fossil fuel. Now, you might actually see a time when fossil fuel, a.k.a. crude oil, dinosaur fuel, or whatever you want to call it, you might see a time whenever you get to see, you know, different technologies. But it's going to be on the time frame of those in power that want to ensure that they still have a way to make money off of it. The joke, even though it may not necessarily be a joke, because it's basically a scam, a lie, and all that kind of jazz, and nobody likes to be lied to, especially, you know, don't like to be stolen from or manipulated. But how we allowed our education system to completely and utterly drop the ball when it comes to science, real science, mad science. I'm not talking about that crazy stuff that you hear these guys in lab coats done sold their soul to the devil. I'm talking about real science. I'm talking about scientific observation, you know, testing and retesting, physics and mechanics and all these different things that goes into, you know, being able to create the things that we actually utilize today, our energy industry. But the joke is it's beyond all that, because, you know, there's wars out there fighting over who's going to have control of what. And why you don't have free energy right now? Well, I guess you're going to have to ask the man that question. Because nature's already provided it. Oh, you want to talk about free energy? The earth is 3/4 covered in water. Hydrogen and oxygen, the most powerful fuels on the planet. You know, the most powerful molecule, the most stable molecule in the world. You know, and if you understood, if you paid attention in science and you understood all of what they were teaching you back in the day about, you know, different reactions of what happens, you know, like for example, whenever you use electrolysis and you separate the hydrogen and oxygen molecules, and then you can light these gases individually, or you can use the oxygen to help burn more quantities of other deals. Because it takes three things to start a fire. It takes a fuel source, an ignition source, and oxygen in order to start a fire. That's basic science right there. They taught you that whenever you first started learning about science. How do you make a fire? Well, you rub two sticks together. All that doggone friction produces heat. And eventually that heat mixed with the oxygen and the material that you're rubbing together, it causes ignition. And next thing you know, you got a fire going on. Cavemen figured it out, I suppose. I mean, they finally were able to cook their food, right? Well, you know, I don't get it. I do get it, but I don't get it because, you know, we don't have education systems. We got public indoctrination systems. They want to indoctrinate you to become a good little worker, a good little drone. You do what you're told, and I know your place, and shut your face, and everything's just fine. Don't ask the teacher questions. I can tell you that from example, because as a child, I was always questioning everything. When they told me something, if things just didn't seem to jive because I had paid attention prior, and then they're telling me something new, and I'm matching this with that, and the mechanics don't work up, so I raised my little hand up there, and I said, teacher, but how's this happening if that's going on? And they like, oh, shut up and get back to studying. They didn't necessarily come out and say it like that, but they may as well have. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just ridiculousness. I'm going to play this little thing right here because this is an interesting thing that happens now and then because of the way that nature does things. Listen to this. It's pretty interesting. It's called a pond turnover.
Pond turnover is a phenomenon that can occur in ponds prone to receiving biological mass. This biological mass can come from a number of sources, including vegetation, either in pond or from shore. It can include fish or bird feces, as well as droppings from cattle and wild animals. Fish food can be part of this biological mass buildup. These contributing materials settle to the bottom and form a layer of decay which produces and traps noxious gases. When conditions are right, all of a sudden, we've actually seen this happen, the whole layer of decaying matter lifts up from the bottom and floats to the surface. At this point in time, the pond cannot oxygenate and life below cannot survive. The fish typically die of a combination of oxygen deficiency and toxicity. Pond Enviro's bubble gun aerator keeps the pond moving. The bubble gun beneficially turns the pond over numerous times a day. Millions of gallons are moved. This keeps the pond from developing a toxic turnover. We've never had a pond with a bubble gun aerator in continuous operation experience a toxic turnover. Please view our other bubble gun aerator videos on bubble gun installation, bubble gun maintenance, and bubble gun tabletop demo.
Yeah, bubble gun. Get your bubble gun today. Not bubble gum, bubble gun. Yeah, you basically stick it down there in the silt and the muck, and you shoot air down in there, and it basically moves all the crud around, and if your pond's already at ready to pop, that'll probably just speed the process up and kill off all your fish and all that kind of stuff, and then you'll have to wait for it to settle. You know, there are natural stuff that you can actually put in those ponds in order to eat up the old biological leaves and dead fish and whatever lands at the bottom of that pond. But essentially what happens is when all the leaves fall off the trees every fall and stuff like that, and they land in that water, and they finally absorb water and they sink all the way to the bottom, well, they start to build layers and it begins to rot. Well, you get when that stuff starts to rot, it actually generates a little bit of heat. So it might be one of the reasons why fish seem to be able to go straight to the bottom in icy cold weathers and still survive through the winter, because it's probably warmer down there, because when that biological stuff is rotten, it releases heat. But that's for another time, another story, or whatever. But either way, what happens is you get layer after layer of this over the years, and gases like methane and CO2 start to build up underneath this this crusty mud layer at the bottom of the pond. Well, that produces kind of like a bubble. And eventually, you know, like a balloon blowing up, or a bubble for that matter, it gets too much pressure in there, and then pow, it pops. If you look at, things about crude oil, how it like starts, some areas it starts to seep up from the ground and all that kind of stuff. Matter of fact, way, way, way back, some of the natives used to use that to seal up their canoes when they made them and stuff. So, there's a whole lot more to the story than meets the eye. But either way, that biomass that's falling down at the bottom of that pond, it can literally take out all your fish. It knock out all the oxygen out of the deal. But why am I bringing that up? Well, you know, all of that stuff down there, you talk about those gases like methane. Methane's a natural gas, and you can use that as fuel. So there's a start to the secret of the whole joke being on you scandal there. Fossil fuel's a lie, folks. I'm telling you right now, it's a lie. And before today's show's over, I'm hoping that you'll understand that, because we got to go down a few things and listen to how it's made, kind of stuff. You know, how do we get crude oil anyway? Well, they're going to say all kinds of things that you're going to recognize, because if you were in school, they taught you stuff in science. They told you about the dinosaur. They told you that it was millions, if not billions, of years ago. All this stuff just died down there and, you know, got covered up, and between the heat and the pressure and all that kind of stuff, well, it made this gooey substance that we call crude oil. So, you know, that's an interesting thing there. You know, it takes billions of years to make crude oil. We'll have to see about that. But either way, you know, that's what they told you. They told you the dinosaurs made the fuel. They told you that, it took billions of years to do so. And so, you know, you go around, you repeat all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, these same scientists later on start telling you about, oh yeah, we got CO2 getting up there in the atmosphere, and it's causing the planet to heat up. But wait a second. Okay, well, if you got all this stuff that's going on, and this is really true, then why are we still using this stuff? If it's really seriously going to damage the world that we live in and cause everything to get hot, you know, well, why are we still using it? Because they know the joke's on you. They know you've been lied to. They're not even worried about it. They're going to tell you constantly that the oil is scarce. That's how they play the game, you know. They want to make sure they, you know, when the demand is up, you know, the cost is up. And when the demand is down, the cost is down. And it affects our economy. It's like a roller coaster ride. See, if you ever want to control the fuel, all you got to do is stop buying it, you know. And they'll drop the price because they got too much. And they can't never let it get to the stage where you realize, hey, wait a second, you guys got more oil than you're talking about, or you've got reserves of gasoline or diesel or all that kind of stuff. You're just playing us for a ball head is what you're doing, trying to make us think we're going to run out of oil. Heck, you think about back during the whole deal with 9/11, how everybody kind of rushed to the fuel station because they figured, oh wow, we're over there attacking the people that send us oil, so we're not going to get no oil, we're not going to have no gas for our cars, so we better go out and buy some while we can. So everybody rushed to the doggone fuel station. People cutting in line and arguing with each other because they thought they weren't going to get no fuel. Yep, joke's on you too, people. You know, it's just crazy. It's just beyond crazy. I paid attention in science class, and all these folks out there that sit there dooming and glooming, talking about, you know, climate change and global warming, and even those who are like apologists for the whole climate change, global warming slash global disruption debacle, They want to charge you carbon taxes and all that kind of stuff. But even those apologists that are supposedly highly educated will tell you how, oh, little tiny fractions, little parts per millions can actually make it up there to the atmosphere and all that kind of stuff. Well, I suppose maybe, flying a jet airplane would put some crud in the atmosphere, but does the laws of physics change just because? You know, is something that's heavier than oxygen? Oxygen gets thinner up there. Check it out. Okay, well, if oxygen can't stay up there, then how in the heck can a molecule that's heavier than it, whether it be carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide, both of those are heavier than oxygen because it's two oxygens connected to one carbon atom. So how's it staying up there? And a little teeny tiny amounts is what they say. That's all it takes is, so many parts per million. So many pieces per million. You know what I'm saying here? Do the math, folks. It's pure ridiculousness is what it is. So the joke is on you. If you're one of those folks out there, college educated, or you really did a lot of studying, maybe you didn't go to college, but you read a lot of books, and you paid attention, and you got it, man. Alright, well, joke's on you. Because just because somebody wrote it don't make it true. Just because it's supposedly a law of physics doesn't make it permanent, don't make it wrote, written in stone, don't make it true. There's a lot of questions to be asked. Well, Mad Science is here to pose those questions. So let's get in. I want you to hear what they say, how this so-called dinosaur fuel is actually made. I want you to hear this.
What drives our cars, buses and planes, powers our electricity, and allows us to cook our food and heat our water. Most of today's energy needs are met by fossil fuels like coal, oil and gas. These unique high energy fuels are non-renewable resources that took millions of years to form. About 2 billion years ago, marine organisms like algae and microscopic animals and plants died and settled on the ocean floor. Beneath other sediments in the ocean, and in the absence of oxygen, these fossils changed into a substance called kerogen. Under heat and pressure, kerogen gradually changes into oil or gas. The whole process usually takes at least a million years.
A million years?
At the molecular level, oil and gas are hydrocarbons made up of hydrogen and carbon atoms. The constant pressure and movement of the Earth's crust squeezes oil and gas through the pores or spaces within rocks. Some oil and gas reaches the Earth's surface and seeps out naturally into land or water. Often it is trapped beneath the surface by impermeable layers or rock structures, like faults and folds. Within the crust, oil or gas deposits build up and form reservoirs. Reservoirs are like vast sponges filled with oil and gas. They can be as large as a city. To find oil and gas deposits, geologists use a number of different survey techniques, including seismic surveys, gravitational surveys, and geological mapping. Seismic surveys use reflected sound waves to produce a 3D view of the Earth's interior. New technologies, such as four-dimensional projections and sophisticated graphic renderings of rock structures, are improving the way we find conventional oil and gas deposits. Energy resources that are currently difficult or expensive to extract are called unconventional oil and gas. In a world with limited energy resources, people are looking at more efficient ways of tapping into unconventional oil and gas, or at alternative and renewable sources of energy from biofuels or the sun. What do you think will be the energy sources of the future?
Fossil fuel, that's what? That's what's going to be the fuel of the future. Because it's ridiculous. It don't have to be, but that's probably what... Neutrons, protons, electrons said, I heard a thing on mainstream radio last night that methane output from cattle is absorbed back into the soil of the earth within 9 years. I think that says. My eyeballs ain't working too good. I think he said 9 years. And so, you know, hey, look, you heard it. It takes millions of years. Okay, the joke's on you again. You know, and you know, these folks that are telling you these things, you know, they really believe it. Hey, why would the mainstream science folks lie to us? Why would the fuel industry, the oil industry, why would they lie to us? I mean, you can always trust your government, right? They're not going to lie to you. Well, man, I'll tell you something else. They're in it to win it. They're in it to make money. And the joke's on you. Fossil fuel's a lie. And if that hurts your feelings, I'm sorry, but it's the truth. You got to have the truth. A little dose of the truth is good for you. But these jokers out there, they know what's what. They know it ain't doggone dinosaurs that made all this oil. And they know that the earth is still doing the same chemistry it's been doing. It's still got the heat and it's got the pressure. That pond rollover that I was talking about, that I played that little deal right there, you know, it's just a prime example. There's always stuff falling into the water. Leaves and dead bugs and, you know, fish poo or, you know, fish food that you throw in there to feed your fish. And it works its way down to the bottom. It produces all this, you know, muck that they call silt, you know. Sometimes other biologicals from, like when it rains and the muddy water comes down and gets down inside there and the pond starts to get silted up. It might have been 10 foot deep 1 year and now it's only 9 foot. And the next thing you know, it's only 6 foot and then it's 5 foot and then it's 4 foot and it's 3 foot. Next you know, you got a mud hole, a little swamp. And all that can be cleaned up out of there, of course, but nonetheless, where do you think dirt comes from? Think about it. You go back and listen to your old science teachers in your mind and the books and all that kind of stuff. Where do you think dirt comes from? Where do you think topsoil comes from? Why do you think worms go down in there and they make little holes and, you know, they basically run the dirt through their body system and stuff, you know? Think about it. What is dirt? when you really get down to it, it's going to blow your doors off. Because as that farmer's doing what he's doing over there, some of the grindings of the, you know, maybe the wheat or the doggone, you know, corn or whatever he's farming that deal, plus all the fertilizers like manure and all that kind of stuff. Well, all of that stuff basically works its way down in the waterways and it makes this muck down at the bottom. Pond scum. And that high nutrient rich water now produces other things, you know, algaes and duckweed and watermill, you know. And so all of this stuff, you know, nature's doing a process. Nature's cleaning up, moving around, it's heating up, all kinds of stuff, you know. And so there's the same chemistry that were going on millions of years ago, or even billions of years ago. Joke's on you folks, it's still going on today. So when the earth stops doing what it is doing, then yeah, we might run out of some things. Maybe, not, I don't know. Depends on how much you paid attention in mad science class. I'm calling it mad science class because school's in session, you know. And for all those highly educated people out there, and even those protesters out there, you know, with your global warming / climate change / climate disruption or whatever, y'all need to get your act together. Joke's on you. You're actually out there physically wasting time to fight a non-existing problem for a fuel source that is never going away. Period. You're never going to see a day when it runs out. Now, what you probably will see is different things like fusion and fission and different things like plasma technologies and engines that are so incredibly efficient that you barely use any type of fuel and there's absolutely no emissions. You'll see a day like that. But not until these money-making madmen of the world, whatever, not until they make their profit. Not until they figure out a way in order to make sure that even if you do have free energy, you still got to pay for it. You're buying bottled water for Pete's sake, because you can't trust the water coming down the pipe, so you'll pay $1 a bottle of water. Heck, that's higher than fuel prices. So if you're gullible enough to buy that, and the earth is 3/4 covered in water, then it's no problem selling you fuel for your car. It's no problem selling you diesel fuel for your buses and all your vehicles out there. You know, and when you finally realize what the heck is going on, where's all this stuff come from? Where's all these products, this plastic, this rubber, all this stuff? Where's it come from? What comes from petroleum products? And what are petroleum products? Well, today here in class, my wonderful friends and family around the world, we're going to figure this out together. And so the joke won't be on us. The joke will be on those who have not heard today's show. So maybe you might want to give them a heads up and say, hey, there's a mad science podcast you might want to listen to. All that money you're spending at the fuel station, and all that time you're wasting hollering about how we're polluting the planet with this and that, well, doggone it, there are methods by which we can ensure that nothing gets wasted, that it all gets used properly, efficiently, in perfect harmony with nature. And so why are you out there protesting the man when the man is the one doing it and he ain't gonna stop? See, it's like this. It's kind of like they got somebody on this side that starts up the problem. They got somebody on this side that's actually creating the problem. They're all in cahoots together. It's the two sides, both sides of the same coin, the both wings on the same bird, and you're all out there protesting the man who is responsible for allowing the other man to do what it is that they're doing to society. So it's not about the fact that we're ever going to run out of oil. That's the joke. That's one of the parts of the joke, anyhow, that you think you're going to not ever have enough of it, or we're going to run out of it. Heck, I wish we would. That would be awesome. I wish they'd one day wake up in the morning and say, hey, look, all our oil fields are dry. And I say, well, I guess we're going to have to go to mad science then and start using what we could have been using all along. But, you know, the environmentalists out there worrying about the doggone windmills karate chopping buzzards out of the sky, you know, that kind of ridiculousness. Or wait, you know, then there's the one where the birds are flying past the solar arrays and they burst into flames, spontaneous bird combustion. Jokes on them too. Alright, so birds ain't catching on fire flying past the doggone solar panels. Buzzards aren't getting karate chopped out of the sky by doggone freaking wind turbines. But if they are, if this is definitely a problem, there are solutions available to ensure that the buzzard doesn't get karate chopped out of the sky by the wind turbine as nature is producing that free energy. So, with that said, let's move on a little bit, because we got to get some knowledge here. We got to hear what they're saying. This is the stuff that you got to learn before you can be thoroughly indoctrinated. You know, it's like the public indoctrination centers that you send your kids to. They're not education centers. They're indoctrination centers. They don't teach your kids about how to think critically and use science to, you know, further humanity. They want you to be good little workers. And so far, so good. You know, there's a lot of good little workers out there. But anyway, let's keep going here.
How
crude oil, also called petroleum, is an unprocessed oil found deep in the ground. It forms naturally from decomposed prehistoric plants and animals. The color can range from clear to black, the consistency from very watery to very thick. But it's always expensive when it hits the pumps. Oil companies who drill wells install pumping units to draw up the fluid that contains crude oil and salty water. This oil field in Central California, USA, has 6,000 produced...
Pause that for a second. Now listen really closely to the details, see, because the secrets are in the details, folks. So it's pulling up crude oil mixed with salty water. Very interesting.
In wells, the pumping units can run 24 hours a day. Here's what goes on inside the well. With each downstroke, the pumping unit pushes a steel rod down the steel tube lining the well. With each upstroke, the rod rises, and the pressure difference between the fluid on the outside and the fluid on the inside opens a ball-shaped valve, plugging the bottom, letting the fluid flow up the tube. Another valve at the top releases the fluid out of the well. To drill a new well, workers first erect a drilling rig at the side, then hoist a giant pipe with a drill bit on the end. They feed this drill pipe through the center of a spinning disc called a rotary table. As the table turns, the drill pipe turns, its weight bearing down and boring a hole through the ground. Once the drill pipe descends its full 9-meter length, they connect another pipe. The process is repeated with subsequent drill pipes until they bore into the reservoir containing fluid. Throughout the drilling process, they pump a mud mixture down the drill pipe. It comes out the drill bit at the end, hits the bottom of the hole, then backs up to the top. This process brings back the drilled out rock. After lining the well with a steel tube to keep the walls from collapsing inward, they mount the pumping unit and install the valves we saw in the model. The pumping unit pushes the rod up and down through the wellhead at the surface. As a safety measure, workers take readings to check the air for any hazardous underground gases that may be exiting the well. Once they determine the area is safe, they draw a sample of fluid to test the well's water to oil ratio. The typical ratio is 90% water to 10% oil.
What do you say? Not 90% to 10% oil? 90% water to 10% oil. Very interesting.
The fluid from each well exits via a pipe, and the pipes from all the wells feed a main line, leading to a gas removal vessel. The fluid contains carbon dioxide, hydrogen sulfide, and natural gas, which has to be extracted. They naturally rise to the top of the vessel and exit via a pipe which runs to the company's gas treatment plant. There, equipment removes and treats the hydrogen sulfide, transforming it into sulfur, which a local farm buys to use as fertilizer.
What? You gonna get some fertilizer out of this too? Do you realize how many products are actually made from what they like to call crude oil, aka fossil fuel? Dinosaur fuel. Joke's on you, folks.
The natural gas and carbon dioxide, meanwhile, are piped to another area where they fuel the company's steam generator. The generator boils...
What? So they're even fueling their generators with it.
The water extracted from the fluid to produce steam. The company injects steam into the wells to heat the fluid, thinning it so that it flows faster. Once gasless, the fluid is piped to the treatment plant, which extracts the salty water. In this big tank, appropriately called a free water knockout, the separation of oil and water happens naturally, the oil floating to the top. To speed up that process, they add a chemical called an emulsion breaker. The extracted water exits via a pipe leading to the steam generator. The oil goes to a clarification tank, in which a chemical process filters out sand, which the fluid brought up from the reservoir. by the end, when the ratio is 98% oil to 2% water, the crude oil is ready to sell.
Hold on, he said 98% to 2% water? Ooh.
Built-in meters give instantaneous water content readings. As an additional quality control measure, the company also draws samples for analysis in its own lab on site. In fact, they test throughout production to ensure sufficient water is being extracted at each phase of processing. Companies buy crude oil as a raw material for producing petrol, asphalt, plastics, crayons, perfume, and many other products. So there you go. Yet another refined report from how it's made.
Yeah, did you hear that? They said they actually make perfume and crayons, too. Pretty interesting stuff, folks. Oh, I saw a lot, you know, the folks out there, like I said, the highly educated individuals, the environmentalists, you know, hey, they got good intentions, right? They say the road to disaster was paved by good intentions, but that's all right. You know, there if there's a problem in this world that needs to be resolved, then you go to your science folks. You know, you go to the holders of knowledge. You know, speak to me, old toothless one. And so, you know, it just blows my doors off, because if you really seriously paid attention to what you just heard right there, there's a whole lot of secrets in the details. Let's keep rolling here. CBD crude oil? Is that even possible?
Okay, I want to talk you through a step-by-step process of using ethanol in a Vincent screw press to extract CBD oil. So you're going to start with fresh biomass. So this is fresh hemp that's been dried. It's probably 10% CBD. You're going to add ethanol, probably 33 gallons every 100 pounds, and you're going to run that through our screw press. After the screw press, you've got two things. You've got the cake, the spent biomass. This is depleted of all the oils and everything else. You're going to be left with the press liquor, which has waxes in the bottom. So there's that. Once you go through winterization, you're going to have your press liquor here that's a bit cleaner. Then you need to reclaim, to go through an ethanol reclamation process, maybe a rotovap or something. And this is what you're going to be left with, raw crude. This is raw CBD crude oil. It's really thick. You know, this just doesn't move around. This right here is probably 50% of that's going to be CBD distillate. So you're looking at probably about 2.5 kilos of distillate there. So today's prices, looking at about $23,000 sitting there. So, in a very fairly effective, simplistic, conventional, and cost of...
Pause that. That little bitty 1 gallon jar, which is there, 1 gallon jug, which isn't all the way full up, is worth about $23,000, and it didn't take billions of years to make. Very interesting. But of course, the products that they're wanting to make with this stuff right here is a lot different than you know, what they're making out there, their perfumes and your crayons and your tires and the plastic bottles that you buy your bottled water in, and so on down the line. Anyway, just keep rolling.
Effective process, you can take your hemp to crude with the Vincent screw press.
So, crude oil from hemp. It's very interesting. All right, he's still got some more going on here. Just give him a second here. When he's, some of these videos don't put like a ton of...
this is a darker one.
Yeah.
You know, we have them lighter. You can see the color of that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But it's hibiscus. This is at 65%. What's interesting here, see this one, you can kind of... Some of it...
So 65% by volume are CBDs?
Yeah. So that's the oil. So you can see, so you can tell that it's fully de-waxed because it's viscous like this, right? It's so this is the quality, you know, the consistency, which is really good, really high in terpenes, this oil here. Okay, so that's it.
Now the difference between that particular type of crude oil and the crude oil that's coming out of the ground is that there's not all the extra chemistry that is involved in the earth. You know, if you think about what's going on down there in the earth, a lot of that stuff it's not stuff you want to be eating or sniffing or whatever. But they're making CBD oils and stuff like that that they didn't turn around and sell a tiny little bottle out there on the market for ridiculous prices. But you know, the health benefits and all that kind of stuff is you know, a whole lot different. So anyway, let's keep rolling here. See if I can skip ahead a bit here. All right, well, maybe they're done talking. All right, so anyway, moving right along, that's crude oil made out of hemp. And so with that said, hemp, what is hemp? It's it's a plant, a cousin of another plant. And that stuff right there is very interesting. So let me scroll back up here and see if I can find where I was. Alright, so anyway, you got crude oil made out of hemp. Alright, now let's go to this one.
You've got to come back with me. Where? Back to the future. Now, what are you doing, Doc?
I need fuel.
Wouldn't it be amazing if we could fuel our cars with garbage? Plastic is a particularly multifaceted material that's bursting with energy. And yet, we mostly throw it away or burn it. A better solution would certainly be to use it to produce fuel or usable plastic. And that's precisely what OMV is working on.
Also wenn ich irgendwo auf der Wiese einen Altkunststoff sehe, oder ich bin in einem Plastikstück sehe, denke ich mir oft schon, ist irgendwie schade drum. Da wäre es viel besser, wenn man aus diesen Altkunststoffen wieder ein synthetisches Öl umwandelt und das einer Raffinerie wieder zuführt.
Und? Was hat er denn mitgegessen?
Ja.
Ah, und ich sehe, mit dem Joghurt bist du auch schon fertig. Dann nehme ich den Becher gleich mit.
Aha, warum das?
Du, den werfen wir in die Riegelanlage.
Ganz einfach.
Und den Kunststoff da, der gefällt mir auch. Kannst du mir auch gleich mitgeben.
Okay, ja, dann.
Danke dir.
Gerne. Plastic is a poor heat conductor, and this poses a challenge for recycling. After all, high temperatures are required over a longer time period in order to break down plastics, making it a very cost-intensive and energy-intensive method. Since 2011, OMV has been researching a new, more energy-efficient way of producing crude oil from plastics. Experts from the Schwechat refinery had the groundbreaking idea of introducing a material into the process to improve the heat conductivity of the plastic. This means less energy and better results. That sounds simple, but building the first pilot plant was immeasurably more complicated.
Selbst die Equipmentteile zu finden, das war schon eine Herausforderung. Es ist eine Lernkurve, mit einer solchen Prototypen umzugehen. Und am Anfang besteht das die Hauptaufgabe darin, die Anlage wieder zu reinigen. Aber sukzessive mit jedem Misserfolg oder mit jedem Aha-Erlebnis kommt man einen Schritt weiter und man lernt mehr daraus, als wenn die Anlage gleich smooth dahin laufen würde.
The prototype was produced to OMV's plans using an innovative modular system. The individual parts were then brought by special transport to the Schwechat refinery, where an experienced team transformed them into a functioning facility in just 5 days. 3 weeks later, and the time had come, the unit was able to start operations.
Es ist jedes Mal ein erhebendes Gefühl, wenn man jetzt hier auf die große Anlage gehen darf. Und es geht dann wirklich vieles durch den Kopf, was so die letzten 7 Jahre alles passiert ist. Wenn man sich das Ganze so durch überlegt, dann macht es dann schon ziemlich ehrfürchtig.
OMV's innovative ReOil technology is set to help ensure that plastic production is no longer a cul-de-sac that ends in waste incineration. This will facilitate an intelligent and sustainable circular economy for plastics. Used plastics are inserted in the unit and fed into a smelting facility. A solvent is then added. This liquid makes the viscous mass turn as thin as water, which in turn enhances heat conductivity. This makes the plastic easier to break down into its constituent parts. Once the process is complete, the liquid that was added previously is re-extracted and ready to be used again. At the end of the process, you have two main products. One part is usable gas, one part is known as syncrude, i.e. crude oil. With this, the products can then be processed in the refinery to make gasoline, diesel, and polymer, itself a base product for plastic. This means that if you fill up at an OMV today or use plastic packaging, it has probably already had something to do with ReOil.
Also die nächsten Schritte auf der ReOil-Anlage in der Raffinerie ist jetzt wirklich, möglichst die Laufzeiten zu verlängern und den Energieaufwand zu reduzieren und die Produktqualität zu steigern.
In around 7 years, OMV intends to start up a full-scale, commercially viable ReOil facility. This will mean that up to a third of Austria's plastic waste can then be turned into crude. Projects like this underline the importance of Schwechat as one of Europe's largest and most cutting-edge refineries.
So, basically what you just heard there, they're taking crude oil, or plastic, which is the same thing, refining it, recycling it back into crude oil again. Imagine that. It's amazing how that works. Anyway, so let's keep all rolling. Oh, by the way, I posted a link over there in People for People that Stephen found about scientists prove fossils from animals and plants are not necessarily for crude oil and natural gas. Swedish researcher find. And he said, what would happen if it were proven that fossil fuels weren't the results of decaying plants and animals? Matter were actually created within the earth due to simple chemistry and could not be scared into believing that we were running out of oil and natural gas. But what I've been trying to say for a long time, the chemistry in the earth, the heat, the pressure, everything that nature's been doing all along, until nature stops doing what nature's doing, you're not going to run out of no crude oil. You're not going to run out of no natural gas. So the joke's on you when you go to the fuel station or go buy your fuel for, you know, whatever it is that you want to run, whether it be diesel, methane, propane, whatever. So let's keep rolling here. Algae to bio crude in less than 60
Making
minutes.
Making fuel from algae sounds like science fiction, but that's the goal at Pacific Northwest National Laboratory. Engineers have created a new way to turn the green goo into energy as part of an effort to reduce use of traditional fuels like oil, which contribute to climate change.
Well, solid biomass is
okay,
not
we
got to
pause there for a second,
into.
You know, because we heard the climate change. And I need to rewind this just a second so you can hear this one part again.
Traditional fuels like oil, which contribute to climate change.
Well, solid biomass.
All right, so the same thing that made it prior is the same thing that you're seeing when you see algae or biofuels is the same doggone thing without all the extras that Earth adds in. Whether it be whatever noxious gases or other contaminants that would be in that oil. So whether you're making it out of algae or duckweed or watermill or wood chips or, you know, whatever, it's the same exact stuff. So you can make plastics out of algae. You can make plastics out of doggone hemp. You can make all kinds of stuff out of these material that they're making there. But this is algae to bio crude in less than 60 minutes. Okay, well, it took, according to science, millions of years, if not billions, for this to happen.
Gas is not something that you can put into a car or into an engine. We need to change it chemically and physically. Our recent publication of our results describes our work in a continuous flow reactor system. It's an actual processing design that could be scaled up to large scale for actual production of real fuels.
The process subjects algae to very high pressure and temperature, the same conditions within the earth that transformed algae to oil millions of years ago. It's a seamless process. Engineers put algae into the reactor for less than an hour, and out comes crude oil, water, and some usable byproducts.
This is the algae feedstock that we use in our process. It is about 80% water at this point in time.
What?
Once we put the algae through our process.
80% water at this time? Another common denominator.
Processing system, it's converted into this type of light bio-crude oil. Final step of the process is then to convert the bio-crude into a finished hydrocarbon product. That's what is in this jar. It's a mixture of gasoline and diesel range hydrocarbon materials.
We can make fuel from algae today, but it's not easy or cheap. This research simplifies the process dramatically, a key step toward lowering the cost of algae fuel.
It's not cheap, it's not easy, that's what they keep on telling you, but if it only takes 60 minutes to make it, that's pretty doggone easy if you ask me, because the other one said it took millions of years. Alright, so let's keep going here. There it is, right there. Biochar, bio oil, and syngas. Wood.
Hello, I'm Casey Hoover, and welcome to Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina. This video is brought to you by the Biofuels Graduate Course in the Appropriate Technology Department. If you have any questions or want to know more information, please email us at appstategci@gmail.com.
Hi. So this is our steampunk pyrolysis bioreactor, is what we like to call it. I'll sort of explain the system to you. So we take biomass, in this case pieces of wood. You can also use really anything that's organic and dry. All you mushers up in Alaska can take your dried dog poop and stick it in there. And then you heat it up in the absence of air. So this bolts down, and there's essentially no oxygen in there. To heat this up, what we're doing is actually using a propane tank and just heating it from underneath. You can also obviously use the biomass itself to heat the reaction, so you could burn some wood under the wood that you're heating up. This is just for demonstration purposes. Basically, you're volatizing everything in the biomass that's not the carbon that ultimately becomes the biochar. So a little bit of carbon remains, and that's sort of your pure biochar charcoal that stays behind. Everything else gets turned into a gas, comes through here. This is a cyclone filter. So the air swirls around, the particles theoretically drop out. Also, we find that some of our tar gets condensed here and falls out. This whole pipe acts as a condenser, so we're losing heat along the way. Then we come here to the car radiator. This is for heat exchange. Obviously, this process produces a lot of heat. So that's one of the products of it, is that you can heat a house or a greenhouse or any number of things. And we're condensing out here water, we're condensing out tar, and we're left just with syngas, which is a combination of a couple gases. Our syngas comes through here and ultimately comes out here. If this gas is clean enough, you can actually stick this directly into an engine and run it on that. In fact, during the World War II, when we were short on oil, it was all being mobilized for the war effort, they actually built cars that ran on a bioreactor. So sort of this whole thing hooked up to the back of a car.
Yeah, and it could actually be scaled down too, but nonetheless. So,
as always, safety comes first. So we hang a streamer so that we know which way the wind is flowing so we can avoid the products of combustion. Now it is safe to begin the reaction and light our reactor.
So essentially, they got a wood gasifier going on right now. It's got propane that's actually heating up a chamber that has wood blocks in it, and basically
after 10 minutes, we have clean fuel gases of carbon monoxide, hydrogen, methane, and some carbon dioxide. So we have collected a bag of gas, and after 30 minutes, we have also collected creosote. And now for fun, we're going to blow up our fuel bag.
It didn't necessarily blow up. I mean, it did burn really well.
Now we are doing fractional distillation, and we are going to collect our creosote from one location and then compare it to the creosote in the other. This location is the hot creosote.
See how thick it is?
Creosote is also something they use to treat wood. So that
dear viewers, if you have any idea what this pink is, please send us an email, because we don't. Our first creosote was about at 600 degrees. Our cooler creosote from the radiator is about at boiling temperature.
Hey, check it out. That's more like gasoline.
That's more like gasoline.
Look at that.
I thought it was like water.
Me too.
Yeah.
Wow.
After the reaction, what we're taking out is biochar.
My name's Jacob. I'm going to be talking about biochar. It's the sort of first revenue stream that comes out of this pyrolysis system. It's based on the concept of terra preta, which is a really ancient concept started by the natives of the Amazon region of Brazil thousands of years ago. And it's very similar to commercial hardwood charcoal. It's just more fully volatilized. So there's not much left other than the carbon compounds. Here's some of it right here. The big difference from charcoal is that it doesn't really have a smoky smell. You can't smell it, obviously, but it doesn't really smell much like smoke. It doesn't really leave much of a residue either. If you break it apart, it's very fine, and then you can just kind of brush it off your hands, and your hands come off mostly clean. It's just a very highly porous structure where microorganisms can take place, and these things are beneficial to all sorts of plant life. They keep water and nutrients from being washed away, from leaching away into the soil. There's maybe a couple different dozen uses for biochar, but the one we're most interested here is the use in gardening and farming.
All right, I'm going to pause that for a second because the byproduct of doing this process is they come up with biochar, which basically like charcoal. So, you know, this stuff is good for like water filtration and all kinds of other stuff. It's good for your garden. And so in the process of making fuel, you're making other things that are useful as well. If you seriously take the time to pay attention on how many products actually come from crude oil, then you have to understand. These folks that are dragging this crude oil up out of the ground, they don't want to stop dragging it up out of the ground because they want to make you new tires, they want to make you plastic bottles and all different types of stuff, not to mention the fuel aspects. And whenever he burnt off what he called creosote the first time, it was thicker and it kind of bubbled up and stuff, but when he burnt off the cooler version of it, it actually burnt like gasoline. So, with that said, those different stages of refinery is how you end up with the different types of fuels that you got. You know, obviously like a diesel would be a thicker with more oil in there, so you're burning the oil different in a diesel engine than you are a gasoline engine. And so with that said, you're using basically a thicker version of the same product, the same fuel. So let's keep rolling here. That was burning off some of the biochar. That's what you hear.
Hi, I'm David Dommerhuth, and I'm the principal investigator for this project. This project is being funded by the EPA. It's a P3, as People, Planet, and Prosperity, grant that students won for Appalachian State. We heat up the vessel when we make the smoke, and then the smoke is condensed right here, and it has a couple of names. The names on that I'm talking about, it's often called pyrolysis oil or pie oil. The new term is biocrude, and it's always been historically known as creosote. So it's a smelly black liquid. It essentially has the same use and value as number two fuel oil. Ultimately, of course, we want the fuel gases. So we're heating up the biomass. We're separating or filtering out the crude so that we don't have that tar going into the engine.
So, for future plans, we hope to scale up, connect it to a generator, and hopefully heat a greenhouse. If you want to know more information, or if you have more information, please email us at appstategci@gmail.com.
So, essentially, a wood gasifier isn't nothing more than a miniaturized refinery and makes many products, byproducts out of the deal. So, it's pretty ironic, and it didn't take billions of years or millions of years to do. So yeah, folks, the joke's on you when you go to the gas station. They're sitting there trying to tell you that it's scarce, and you know, you got the oil market up there going up and down, and what's the whole purpose of that? Well, I guess it's to make the fat cat some money. You don't get gold tooth for free. You gotta make that bling in order to get that gold tooth with a diamond in it. So, you know, Uncle Sam, you know, and all those folks out there in the oil industry and even in the energy industry as far as electricity and even in alternative such as wind and solar and all that kind of stuff, you know, they're going to get their bling, I guarantee you that, no matter what. They're going to have that gold tooth with a diamond in it. You could cut glass. You could write your name in the windshield of your car while you're buying that dinosaur fuel. What do you think? Joke is on you. So, let's keep rolling here. Does oil come from dinosaurs?
Hello, and welcome to Ask a Paleontologist. I'm Dr. Scott Persons, and today's question comes to us from the Shelf Life Bookstore in Calgary. One of their patrons asks, is it true that my car runs on fuel from a dinosaur? Although it's commonly said that our oil is a fossil fuel coming from dinosaurs, that's a myth. Now, petroleum is a fossil fuel, meaning it's the result of prehistoric organisms that have died and then been buried by layers and layers of sediments and then pressure cooked by the resulting heat and compressive forces. And it's also true that a lot of oil deposits, including those around Calgary, Alberta, date back to the time of dinosaurs. However, most of those deposits are marine, and the prehistoric organisms that left them behind were tiny. We're talking about stuff like zooplankton and algae and diatoms, organisms that are individually super duper small, but collectively extremely abundant and have an enormous biomass. Now, it may be that on occasion, a dinosaur would die on land, and its body would float out to sea, where it could sink down and make its own minor contribution to the resulting oil deposits. But overall, that was pretty rare. And when you're filling up your car at the local corner gas station, there really is no dinosaur going into your tank. Thanks for the question. And if you've got one for me, leave me a comment below.
All right, so look, man, Davy Jones is probably in your gas tank, you know, because when the dinosaur floated out to sea, like he said, and sunk to the bottom, made fuel, you know, with that bio, whatever, biomass. Well, you think about all the ships that went to sinking down in there. Eventually, some of that become fuel, too. Some of those people were in your hot rod while you're screaming down the road, smashing on the gas. You're cooking your ancestors in the combustion chamber and so on down the line. So, you know, it don't matter whether it's modern day time. You know, bird falls out of the air, lands in a pond. It becomes part of that biomass, the trees, the sticks, the bugs, or whatever that gets down in there. And so, you know, it all basically starts the same process that nature's been doing over and over and over and over again since the dawn of time. It's been recycling, it's been mixing chemistry, heat and pressure, and so on down the line. So that very first thing that I played to you about a pond rolling over, that's a real event. That really actually occurs. So when all that gas builds up underneath all that silt and that muck and all that, it's all trees and bird poo and whatever else landed in that water that's biological. It's all carbon-based. And so, you know, it turns around and it makes methane, it makes CO2, it makes all kinds of different stuff, you know. If you want to try it out, go get you a big old rock and find you a shallow pond that ain't been taken care of and throw it out there in the middle of that pond and watch that Texas tea start rolling up there to the top. It's all black and cruddy. Looks just like what? Crude oil. Yeah, and it didn't take a million years to get there because that farmer only made that pond about 10 or 15 years back. And it got all silted up from all the trees laying around and all the crud that came off of the doggone the farm. You know, all the fertilizers, the cow manure and the anhydrous ammonia and all the different chemical fertilizers that he bought from whoever. So, you know, we're not just putting dinosaurs in our gas tank. We're putting people, we're putting animals, we're putting plants, we're putting anything biological that was misfortunate enough to fall down to the bottom of the deal and turn into that mix of soupy crud, basically heat and pressure done. So you got your ancestors in your carburetor, you got the dinosaurs in your carburetor, you got the plants. You might even have somebody's Mary Jane up in there, you know, somebody's hemp shirt or whatever. Anything that's biological that can rot will rot, and it will produce methane, it'll produce carbon dioxide, it'll produce all different types of chemistry. And all of that kind of stuff is combined into a big old black mucky goop, you know, kind of like what that dude named Jed on the Jed Clampett on the Beverly Hillbillies, when he's out there shooting at a rabbit, and up through the ground come the bubbling crude. Yep, there you go. And it doesn't stop there. So yeah, the joke's on you, all you highly educated individuals out there, such as the mad science guys, because they got their act together, the mainstream science guys and all the folks out there that think it's all right to try to get rid of fossil fuels. Well, you know, I got news for you, I'm sorry to say, but you ain't never, ever, 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 ever in a trillion, trillion, trillion lifetimes, unless this planet, this Earth that we live on, stops doing what it does, nature is going to recycle everything, including you, into the system, and eventually you'll be in some jet airplane's fuel system, or you'll be in some carburetor, and you'll be flying down the road. Don't even know it, but you'll be there. You might be that extra boost that makes them win the trophy at the race, you know. So, you know, it might have been, all these different dinosaurs or somebody's family pet or the bird that fell out the sky or whatever, all the different chemistry that works its way down into the system and is under heat and pressure with lack of oxygen to boot. And so it makes crude oil. You know, it's a gasifier system. You know, nature has its own gasifier system. Imagine that. What about all these volcanoes? What the heck is fueling all those? Well, that's another story for another day, but let's keep moving on, because we're learning a few things here. You know, if the joke's going to be on us, we at least need to know the punchline. You know, the punchline is, hey, just give the man your wallet with all the cash in it and call it a day and go out and work and buy you a new wallet and put more cash in it that you could then in turn return around and find the man with the gold tooth and hand it to him. See, Uncle Sam does want you. All right, you're good for the piggy bank. Uncle Sam sitting around in his jacuzzi drinking these big old umbrella drinks and having a good old time and laughing to the bank, laughing all the way to the bank, because you think it's going to run out. They've told you 20 years ago, hey, we're going to run out in 20 years. Well, now 20 years later, hey, we're going to run out in 20 years. But nobody was around 20 years ago except somebody paying attention who said, yeah, you said that 20 years ago. And now the oil prices keep going up. When I was a kid, they used to buy gasoline for like 50 to 75 cents a gallon. It was cheap. You could buy a lot of gas. You could take a $5 bill and nearly fill up your entire tank. And then you can go on journeys and have a good old time. You know, and if you had the right vehicle, like a little Honda scooter, you could put 50 cents in that and run all doggone week long. So, what gives here? You know, I'm 54 years old, and now you go there, the gas is $2-3 a gallon, and depending on what time of year it is or how they say the economy is, it might be up to $4 a gallon. I've seen it like that. So all of that stuff, you know, you're raking up your leaves, you're doing a good thing, keeping the neighbors happy because your yard's all well-groomed, and you take your grass clippings, and you put them in a bag, and then you can't find a place to take them because the trash man don't want to fill up the dump with a bunch of grass clippings and grass. They'd rather fill up the dump with plastic and precious metals and all that kind of stuff. Everything that's recyclable. Well, that bag of trash right there is recyclable. You can take that bag of trash, which ain't trash, it's what nature does when the leaves fall on the ground and the grass rots and falls over. Well, it turns into more soil, turns into more dirt. Imagine that. Nature's recycling that too. Well, you can take that stuff and you can make a compost heap and you can use it for fertilizer on your doggone garden out there. Or you can gasify that stuff and turn it into crude oil. You can turn it into fuel to run your generator. How ridiculous is that? All that stuff that you were throwing in the trash, you're going to throw your fuel in the trash and go out and buy somebody else's fuel. You the man, or the woman, whatever the case may be. But Uncle Sam needs another gold tooth, so I'm going to say maybe you just need to stay buying with the system. Go out there and buy you some more fuel, man. Buy you some more makeup and some lipstick and some perfume and some plastic bottles to drink your water in. Earth is 3/4 covered in water. If you're willing to pay $1 for a bottle of water, and in some cases, if you go to the ball game, it might cost you $5 or $10 for a bottle of water. That's pretty doggone steep. Or you could just walk over there and drink out of the water fountain. But nobody wants to do that because that water coming down from the pipeline from your local water distribution center, who knows what's in that water? Anything from fluoride to chlorine to vitamins that weren't worked out very well through the system because of the way they press these vitamins. It's like putting a rock in your belly and it doesn't dissolve like it should. So yeah, so that's why everybody got to go out and buy water filters and bottled waters, because the system wasn't allowed to do what nature does. Anyway, let's move right along here. Don't worry,
our civilization runs on oil. It's the cheapest, most energy dense and portable fuel we've ever found. Nature took tens of millions of years to make petroleum.
Tens of millions of years!
Maybe
it took
the best of it in less than 200. A little over a decade ago, eminent petroleum geologists calculated that global oil production would soon hit a peak and begin to decline, no longer meeting ever-rising demand. But oil industry spokesmen countered with the message, "Don't worry, there's plenty of oil," and assured us everything would be fine. So, what actually happened? World crude oil production flatlined in 2005, and oil prices went crazy. Wars erupted in the oil-rich parts of the world, and the global economy went into a tailspin. The term peak oil entered the lexicon. The oil industry is now staging a PR counteroffensive. They're telling us that applying new technologies like hydrofracking to low-porosity rocks makes lots of lower-quality, unconventional oil available. They argue we just need to drill more to produce more. Problem solved. But wait, there's actually new here.
Most of this technology has been around since the 1980s. The unconventional resources have been known to geologists for decades. What's new is high oil prices. It's high oil prices that make unconventional oil worth producing in the first place. It takes lots of money and energy, not to mention water, to frack low porosity rocks. And the environmental risks are staggering. How does the economy handle high oil prices? Well, it turns out the economy hates high oil prices and responds by going into recession, which makes energy prices volatile, rendering the industry subject to booms and busts. So what's the bottom line here? Yes, there's still oil in the ground. We just can't afford it. In broad terms, the peak oil analysts were right. But the fossil fuel industry is winning the PR battle. What really matters, though, is not who wins the debate, but how we prepare for the inevitable. We've got to wean ourselves off our high-energy lifestyle. We'd be foolish to wait for events to settle the debate once and for all. Let's say goodbye to oil. It's saying goodbye to us.
Let's say goodbye to oil, folks. Ha! Ain't gonna happen. It just simply is not going to happen. There's too many products. Everything from medical to mechanical or whatever. You know, you're never going to see a day when we say goodbye to oil. Now, when we want to get to where we're using that stuff more efficiently, then we'll start into plasma gasification to where you won't even have to have a sewage plant anymore, because every single household out there will be recycling yesterday's breakfast or today's lunch or dinner into biofuels that then in turn could actually be turned into crude oil again. And so whatever, you know, just like nature recycles everything, so shall we. We will have to mimic what nature does in order to have a good clean planet that we're not sitting there drilling holes in all the time. And that, don't even get me started on fracking, because once you start busting up the ground and sucking out all that gas and water and everything like that, well, you start reducing the hydraulic pressure underneath the doggone ground that you've got your houses on, your buildings. There might be an entire city on a massive pocket of fuel that somebody right now is literally, sucking the hydraulic pressure out and not replacing it with anything else. So when that happens, eventually all that weight of all those doggone buildings on top of that ground going to give way. You might see a day when a massive, giant sinkhole the size of an entire city opens up and swallows up an entire city. I mean, come on. Common sense dictates that you need to know that if you got that hydraulic pressure under there and everything's stable, the moment you start busting it up and extracting that hydraulic pressure out, well, then now you got issues. You got sinkholes popping up where they didn't before. And then people are like, oh, it's the apocalypse, man. Oh, sure it is. But it's a self-fulfilled prophecy. You suck the hydraulics out of there, now your foundation of your house is cracking. Your house is cracking in half. You know? It's like, I swear, man. The joke's on you. The joke's been on you for the longest time. A lot of these folks out there know what's going on. And they got the terminology written into your insurance plan. Why, it's an act of God. Well, wait a second. I thought these folks didn't believe in God. So, you know, hey, it's science, right? Well, if it's an act of God and you don't have to get paid by the insurance company, well, that sounds like a loophole in order for the system to be able to rip you off yet once again. But it is what it is, folks. And, you know, maybe it's not such a funny joke at the end of the day, because we're still going to war over the same thing, whether it be natural gas pipelines or oil pipelines or whatever, when in reality we could be using all of our waste in order to make the same product that we're trying to bust up the ground to get. You know, they had a swamp that, because of a salt mine, that the whole swamp went down into the mine. They had this big old whirlpool, and they're like, oh, what's going on? It's sucking down the trees. Well, yeah. stupid. You done dug a big hole right next to a waterway. I mean, what'd you think was going to happen? Eventually, something's got to give. So anyway, let's keep moving on here. Why we will never run out of oil.
This is the scene that develops in their mind when they think of the origins of petroleum. A couple dinosaurs hanging around the old watering hole, and something bad happens. This bad thing kills them all. They're all laying around dead, and they somehow turn into oil and slide into a hole in the ground. Several million years later, this oil gets pumped out of the ground and into your gas tanks or diesel tanks. The boring scene that should be coming to their mind is actually this. What is this, you may ask? Well, it's aquatic organisms. Plankton, zooplankton, phytoplankton. And these small organisms, over eons and eons, suspected that they lived in a low oxygen environment and died and laid down high carbon content organic layers in coastal swamps. At least this is according to the experts. And this time scale, which was about 300 million years ago, is known as the Carboniferous era. Now, it's called the Carboniferous because we find a lot of carbon-containing deposits in this rock layer. Now, this predates the Triassic, Jurassic, and Cretaceous periods, which is when dinosaurs roamed the Earth. So, Carboniferous laid down oil deposits before the dinosaurs. Not to say there were never any oil deposits later, but the Carboniferous is suspected to be the fundamental and majority of our petroleum deposits. So basically, sun rained down energy on small organisms, aquatic organisms. They died, leaving this energy in their bodies. This accumulated, forming petroleum. This is according to petroleum geologists, which is actually its own field of geology. Now, these are working geologists, not just academics, because oil companies hire these people to find oil deposits, which, of course, makes them lots of money. So they need to understand the origins of oil and where it is laid down so they can find it, pump it out, and then have people buy it from them. Now, this all ties into why we will never run out of oil, if you were wondering why. So oil is, of course, a fossil fuel. It's laid down a long time ago from dead organisms. It's also a natural and limited resource, meaning that as we use it, there will be less and less of it every day that we use it. Now, how much total oil is there? Well, estimates are about 1.5 trillion barrels. A barrel of oil is about 42 gallons. And we utilize about 95 million barrels per day. Of course, the total amount and the amount we use every day is estimates. Now, if you divide the amount we use by the total amount, you get about 43 years left at current usage rates. So you might be thinking like, well, 43 years, we will have zero oil left. But that is not the case. And the reason that's not the case is a little field I like to call economics. As oil reserves decrease, at a steady demand rate, they would decrease at a set rate. However, as the reserves decrease, the price will naturally increase, which drives down the demand. This could lead to a situation, let's say in about 35 years, this is just a guess, we could have 300 billion barrels of oil left instead of 1.5 trillion. But gas prices may be about $25 US per gallon, and maybe the usage rates would be 5 million barrels per day. That's just because the price is so high at $25 per gallon. Now, these numbers might seem off, especially the price per gallon for fuel. However, just as a personal note, I remember when my father was my age filling up his vehicle, it was about 85 cents a gallon. It's about four times that much now for me to fill up. Now, some of that's due to inflation, and of course, some of that is due to, of course, the price of oil. Now, you have to remember as well that oil companies process and extract the easiest to access oil first. The reason for this is they need to make a profit, and if they went after the hardest to access oil, they would not be turning a profit because their competitors would be getting easier oil, and it would cost less for them to develop and market their products. So, as oil reserves decrease, the price will naturally increase. Not only that, it will increase because extracting the oil is going to be harder and harder to get and find. That's just basic economics. You have to remember that oil is a inanimate object, and it doesn't really care what the price of it is. Once it's out, it's out. Now, this is not to condemn the use of oil. Everyone watching this video, myself especially included, has benefited from the use of petroleum. It gives us an extremely cheap fuel source for moving products, making plastics, air travel, everything. This economy runs on oil. But is it ever going to run out? Well, the answer is no. Oil's never going to run out. However, that's not to say we'll always have a huge, easy, and cheap supply of it. Over time, it will get more expensive, and at some point, it will be just not economically feasible to use anymore. So will we run out of oil? No. But one day, you may not be running oil in your vehicle.
So, this guy put it in mathematical perspective of how much oil is actually going to cost at one point in time. I'm telling you right now, you're never going to see a day where you ever run out of oil. It's physically impossible for us to ever do that.
So it keeps rebuilding itself back in.
Yep. So, anyway, moving right along, let's go with this right here.
The world is on the cusp of an energy crisis. For the last few decades, the human population has boomed, and demand for heating, transport, and energy has dramatically increased. Society has grown dependent on fuel to function. By far the main source of fuel is oil, the black gold. It is the most valuable natural resource on the planet. In recent years, the price of oil has ballooned. In 2000, the typical cost of oil was $35 per barrel. In 2012, the price had rocketed to $112. The industry says this is because of the unprecedented rise in demand, and supplies are running out as oil wells are drying up. But the International Energy Agency says that the world's oil supply was 87.1 million barrels a day in 2012, much more than the 75.2 million barrels produced each day in 2000. So why did prices increase so dramatically to reflect depleted stores of oil, when the supply of oil actually increased? Could it be that the oil industry is sitting on vast hidden reserves? Could this be the world's biggest con? The oil industry justifies high prices with the peak oil theory. This is the idea that there is a limited supply of oil in any given...
I want to answer that question. Could this be the world's biggest con? That's what I've been trying to say for a long time. The joke's on you, folks. When you go to the doggone fuel station and you think you're putting dinosaurs in there and it's scarce and we're going to run out in so many years, they've been saying, like I said, 20 years ago, they were saying, oh, we're going to run out in 20 or 30 years. And now, 20 or 30 years later, it's, we're going to run out in 20 or 30 years. And the ridiculousness continues. We showed example of how you can make the same materials and actually cleaner materials out of hemp. You can make it out of wood chips. You can make it out of grass, duckweed. Basically when the farmer's out there picking up that corn and everybody's talking about making ethanol, alcohol basically out of corn. Well, what about the stalks themselves? Because the stalks, you could turn around and gasify that and turn that into crude oil. You could turn it into syngases and so on down the line. And, it's not just me that knows this. The same system knows this. They all know this stuff. But, with the environmentalists out there raising a ruckus, talking about our planet's heating up and all this kind of stuff, with the carbon tax debacle and all this kind of stuff, there's so much money to be made. The more these people are out there hollering about global warming and climate change, these folks already got their own system in play to scam you out of all kinds of money. So just for the mere luxury of breathing, you're going to have to pay a carbon tax. And it's ridiculous because these companies get carbon credits that they can sell to other companies. So if this company over here wants to pollute more, well, all they got to do is use those carbon credits. And so this is supposed to balance it out. How? Well, the whole fact of the matter is carbon is what feeds the plants. Carbon is what you're made out of. You have three-quarters water. You are a carbon-based life form. And when you go into the dirt, you become part of what nature's already been doing for years. You become part of the system. It's that simple. So you're never going to see a day when it runs out. And it didn't take billions of years. Like the guy said, they could make that oil in 60 minutes. And it didn't take no billions of years for the man to make crude oil out of hemp. It took a little bit of chemistry and understanding of how this process works. But the same thing, if you can make plastic bottles out of crude oil, you can make plastic bottles out of hemp seed oil, you can make plastic bottles out of, wood crude, and so on down the line. And then you can turn around and recycle those plastic bottles and turn them back in by reverse engineering, just by understanding the physics of what's going on. So the joke's on you. When it comes down to wind turbines and solar panels and all the different alternative energy, I got news for you. Even the hydroelectric plants were alternative energy, because nature's the one pushing that water. They might have built a dam to boost up the pressure of that water coming down there and be able to control it and send it down where they want it to those turbines. But nature's moving that water. Nature's moving the air. Nature's pushing the sunlight out there. So you got heat, you got pressure, you got all the things necessary for the energy generation. And folks want to sit there and argue till they're blue in the face that there's no such thing as free energy. Well, they obviously did not pay attention in science class, otherwise they wouldn't be spewing out such ridiculousness. And so for the highly educated college graduates of the world, the people from Yale or Harvard, or all the scientists out there with your fancy degree on the wall, the joke's on you as well. You bought into the lie just along with everybody else. And all those folks out there buying into the whole climate change lie. I've heard some really highly educated people talk about how, it's real. It's real because it gets up there. It causes greenhouse gases. It's global warming. La, la. I've heard it all. And even their own shenanigans will tell you that water is the best greenhouse gas. Water vapor. And so, wait a second. Ain't there water in the air? Now, you're kind of like floating in the sea. You got hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, other trace gases all around you. For our fortunate luck, we don't have massive quantities of CO2 because we'd suffocate. And if we had massive quantities of carbon monoxide, that's why we have these testers, these carbon monoxide testers, because that'll give you carbon monoxide poisoning. You can actually be poisoned by carbon. That's kind of crazy, ain't it? Because there's some places in your body where you don't want it, like in your lungs. But nonetheless, even when it comes down to burning coal, burning what they call fossil fuel, wood-fired stoves, and so on down the line, you're not doing anything that nature hasn't already done prior to you. And so with that said, if done responsibly and efficiently, you wouldn't even have to worry about carbon emissions in the air. Just by re-engineering how you inject the fuel or how you are burning that fuel or whatever, you can get a clean burn, and that's not beyond the realms of possibility. But hey, why wouldn't they want you to have a car that could get several hundred miles to the gallon? Well, maybe because they need to sell you more fuel. So you get what you get, and you basically get what you demand. So if you're demanding that they have fuel for your car, well, you're going to get fuel for your car. You're not going to see a day when the internal combustion engine goes completely away. You might see a day where the internal combustion engine is maximized with using plasma technology or induction heating and all the cool stuff that we have access to right now. But you're not going to see a day when the internal combustion engine goes away. It works too well. Like they say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And so with that said, they're going to figure out more creative ways in order to get that engine to do a lot better than it does before. But once again, it's always going to be on you. The joke's always going to be on you. So in order for us to be able to reach this perfect world where we're actually working in perfect harmony with nature, somebody's going to have to get paid. And it ain't going to be you. It's going to be Uncle Sam. He needs another gold tooth with a diamond in it. So let's keep rolling here.
Reserve, and that technology will get better at producing it, so there will be a peak period of production before the oil begins to run out. This theory was formed in 1956 by geoscientist M. King Hubbard. While working for Shell, he calculated that the United States would reach its highest production of oil by 1971, and he was right. He predicted the world's highest rate of oil production would be in 1995. But since then, oil industry experts have continually moved the predicted date of peak oil production. The current prediction is for world oil production to peak by 2030. Because of this, prices are expected to remain high for the next two decades in order to reduce demand and stop the oil from running out too soon. Once the peak has been exceeded, prices will skyrocket again to reflect the limited supply. Author Jerome Corsi claims that peak oil production is a false prediction created by the oil industry. Because the predicted date is constantly moving and is determined by scientists working for the industry, conspiracy theorists claim the oil industry is using the peak oil theory as an excuse to charge exorbitant prices for oil for the next 50 years. Oil companies admit setting aside up to 2 million barrels of oil each day for future use. In 2014, Goldman Sachs estimated that the rate of crude oil being produced is increasing nearly twice as fast as the rate of world demand. Conspiracy theorists claim this is clear evidence that the oil industry is lying. They have more than enough oil and are pretending to have decreased supplies simply so they can rake in the cash. Corsi and his supporters claim there is in fact an almost infinite supply of oil. Specifically, they claim it is possible to synthesize oil using the Fischer-Tropsch process. The Fischer-Tropsch process was discovered by German scientists during World War II. It is a reaction that converts hydrogen and carbon monoxide to liquid fuels. It needs coal, methane, or biomass to work. But the US Department of Energy confirms that Fischer-Tropsch fuels burn cleaner than other liquid fuels and can serve as a substitute for diesel in trucks and even jet engines. According to the National Energy Technology Laboratory, these synthetic fuels have been researched by Shell, Chevron, ExxonMobil, and Sasol. But only South Africa has deployed vehicles with synthetic fuels derived from coal for the past 30 years. Jerome Corsi says Fischer-Tropsch fuels haven't been deployed in the US because Big Oil has lobbied and bribed successive governments to stick with conventional crude oil provided by the industry. The industry says synthetic fuels have not become mainstream because the manufacturing process is slow and too expensive. The Department of Energy says it is researching methods to make these fuels less expensive and cleaner. They have given no estimate as to when this might be achieved. Despite the dangerous competition posed by synthetic fuels, the price of oil has remained at record highs for the past decade. There is strong evidence to suggest this is because of good old-fashioned price rigging. Up to 80% of the world's oil reserves rest in the hands of a group of nations who have formed an international trade bloc to regulate the oil industry. They call themselves the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, or OPEC. Each of OPEC's 12 members agree on standard price rates and, more importantly, decide upon annual quotas for oil production. This means that despite demand for oil and sufficient oil reserves, if OPEC decides it won't produce enough crude oil in any given year, it will do so, and it will charge what it likes for each barrel.
The price of oil is a market determined process.
Normally, this kind of cartel action is prohibited under competition laws. However, because OPEC is an organization of countries with nationalized reserves, not companies, its members have sovereign immunity and are not subject to competition or antitrust laws. Between 1999 and 2007, 16 bills were put before Congress to make OPEC's anti-competitive price fixing illegal. All were overwhelmingly defeated by Congress. Even if they had succeeded, President George W. Bush pledged to veto any anti-OPEC legislation. Instead, commentators believe that in 2003, Bush led the invasion of OPEC's most anti-American member, Iraq, in an effort to give the US more control of the Middle Eastern oil fields. However, this has yet to be proven against the official reason for the war, that is, the desire to remove weapons of mass destruction from Saddam Hussein's arsenal. Western oil companies may also be acting illegally to ensure high prices. In 2014, The Thomson Reuters Foundation published a report revealing that companies including Shell, ExxonMobil, Chevron, and BP paid $3 billion to the US government to settle allegations that they had systematically underreported the value of resources they mined from federal and Native American leases since the turn of the century. In 2013, a class action lawsuit was filed against BP, Shell, Statoil, and energy trading company Vitol, accusing them of fixing the price of oil since 2002. The lawsuit is ongoing. The industry says prices have remained high because the production of conventional crude oil is declining. Increasing amounts of oil are derived from shale rock, deep sea wells, and oil sands. Consequently, since 2005, the oil industry has spent more and more money on exploration and development, from $250 billion in 2005 to $700 billion in 2012. This, they claim, is the real cause behind increased oil prices. Today, demand is falling and oil prices in 2015 are expected to fall to $85 per barrel. According to industry expert Steve Coppitz, this is partly a reflection of the changing landscape of the energy industry. Since the 1980s, developed governments have increasingly moved towards renewable energy sources like wind and solar power, or alternative non-renewables like nuclear energy and natural gas. With electrical cars and public transport steadily increasing in popularity, oil is becoming less necessary for the Western world to operate. Simply put, lifestyles are changing to suit a world without oil. Whether or not the oil industry is hiding vast reserves of oil in order to inflate their profits, or suppressing alternative methods of fuel production with the same goal, there is certainly strong evidence to suggest that the price of oil has been rigged in one way or another for over 40 years.
Hi guys, what do you make of that? Do you think oil companies are cheating us out of money? Let us know what you think in the comments below.
If you like this video, you might check out Is Free Energy Being Suppressed? Pretty interesting conspiracy there.
As always, thanks for watching and don't forget to subscribe.
See you next time.
So, you know, if you go out there and you take a peek around and you see a lot of things, there's a Paul Watson from Whale Wars is out trying to protect the whales out there because they want something from those whales. I threw in a Wikipedia article on whale oil. You could take time to look at it if you like. Hey, what they do to these whales, and it's you know, I'll tell you what, oil. Yeah, it's just folks, the joke's on you. And for some folks and the whales, it's not so funny. But you know, you got to learn to laugh in the face of adversity, I guess, because this is just an example. And you know, while I don't like the idea of people hurting whales in order to get oil, but it's been done for you know, years, if not longer. And you know, even when it comes down to different you know, like deer hunting and stuff like that, you'll find you know, there's greasy stuff inside these deers, a fatty substance, which basically is the same substance that the oil is being pulled out of the ground. It just blows my doors off. People just don't realize it. They're not even paying attention to, you know, common sense. But everything out there is fuel. I did a radio show on that. It's kind of basically like today's show, you know. And so, you know, with that said, you're not going to see a day whenever you run out of oil. It's not physically possible. We got too much algae. We got too much, as a matter of fact, too much algae. You see some of the lakes out there because of the way that golf courses and farmers and even residents are fertilizing their grass and things that they're doing, that they're putting too much nutrients into ponds and lakes and stuff like that. And then you'll get these runaway algae blooms, and then they wonder why fish are dying off and stuff like that, because some algae will suck the doggone oxygen out of the water, and they can't breathe. Plus the fact that there are other algae out there, like the red tide algae, that will actually release toxin in order to get more food. So basically, they'll kill off biological things like fish or whatever around them, and that they feed off of that nutrients and such. So if you understand the chemistry, if you understand the basic science of how this world actually functions, then it all starts to become pretty doggone self-evident that we're being lied to. This whole entire time, we all been lied to. What they teach you in school is a farce. They're going to tell you, we're going to run out of dinosaur fuel. You know, there's no such thing as free energy, and so on down the line. Well, if there ain't no such thing as free energy, you know, I'll eat my hat, plain and simple, because, you know, nature's proven it over and over and over again. It's just pure ridiculousness. But, you know, it's going to be up to you to decide whether you want the joke to remain on you or whether you want to, you know, get together and start resolving issues. If you're worried about carbon emissions, then take some common sense and some knowledge and re-engineer a few things to run better. Make them run more efficiently. That's all you need to do. You know, it's not about the fact that we don't have enough resources. We got more than enough resources. You know, yesterday, Friday, because we're starting to do a Knights of the Round Table on Friday nights at my time, Central Time, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Central Time, and whatever that equates to your time zone. I think if you're in the UK, you're 6 hours ahead of that. And other places, you're either an hour forward or you're an hour behind. But either way, we're doing the Knights of the Round Table. We were talking about starvation in the world. You know, and starvation, you know, isn't just due to the lack of food. Sometimes it's just due to the lack of logistics of getting food to the people. And sometimes it's because of, you know, disputes out there or civil wars, people fighting over politics and whatever. In some cases, they might be fighting over religion, or, you know, one place, one person thinks that this is theirs and that, and vice versa, whatever. But for the most part, in this world, the resource is being fought over is oil. You know, oil is just as abundant as water. You know, the same chemistry is all involved in there. And you got water that's down inside this stuff. And, you know, when the heat and the pressure is mixing it up, the water makes it easier for that stuff to mix is like it does. And then whenever they pull it up out of the ground, they go through the whole separation process. The water in itself is fuel. And if you understood the basic physics of water, how it's hydrogen and oxygen, you know, then you realize that. But the lies will be told. They'll keep on saying, well, it takes too much energy to do this. It takes too much energy to do that. It's too slow. It's too expensive. You've heard them all. You've heard every excuse under the sun why it is we can't do it. We could be running all of our vehicles on electrical. Of course, now, you know, then you got the environmentalists is going to talk about, you know, all the different things that it takes to make batteries and so on down the line. Well, you know, hey, it's a give-take world here. You know, capacitor technology could replace battery technology. A combination of the two could make it so that you wouldn't have to have near as much. There are solutions to every single problem under the sun. Now, in order to get people resolved to actually believing that we could resolve it, then that's going to be the trick. That's the biggest crisis we got. It isn't an energy crisis. It isn't a lack of food crisis. It isn't a lack of water crisis. We've got everything in abundance more than what we could ever use in a trillion, trillion, trillion lifetimes, regardless of the population. But yet, you keep on hearing it. People like Bill Gates talking about using vaccines to depopulate the planet. Well, if we do a good job with vaccines, we can control the population. What? I was under the impression that vaccines were supposed to be there to help cure people from diseases or prevent diseases. Not to prevent somebody from having a child. You know, it's pure ridiculousness. You know, they can pull a lot of monkey business, a lot of shenanigans. They can pull it on we the people all the doggone time. And for some reason, we sat back idly by and allowed them to do exactly what they're doing. But, like I said, when you go to the fuel station, the joke is on you. Fossil fuel's a lie. And if by now, after hearing everything you heard on this this show today about how they get it out of the ground, how they make it, or how nature makes it, even to the extent of the pond, why the pond's rolling over. You know, everything. They make biofuels, biodiesels, things like hemp. Because hemp looks so much like cannabis, like marijuana, they want to regulate that too. They made rope out of hemp for years and years and years prior to the time when they started illegalizing, making it illegal for marijuana. You know, somebody out there want to toke up on the happy grass? Hey, to each your own, man. You know, the wacky, the backy, or whatever. You know, you do what you do. You know, if nature put it down there, then must be a reason why nature put it down there. Nature recycles everything into the system, including you. So, hey, if you ain't figured that out by now, then you probably never will believe that there's anything such as free energy. The laws of physics and thermodynamics that are constantly misquoted are, pretty much going to drive you insane if you do pay attention, because things aren't jiving. The whole climate change debacle, global warming, climate disruption. You notice how it's got many names? That's because whenever it was 20 inches of snow outside, that wasn't global warming, that was climate change. And when it was, hot, well, that was global warming. And when it was just kind of crazy weather, that was climate disruption. They couldn't get their act together. You know, it's kind of hard to tell everybody the planet's heating up when they're freezing. And so, they kind of had to change the name. But regardless, they've held on to the lie. Climate change believers are one of the largest growing religions in the world today. You know, they believe it so much. They have faith in their prophets, the scientists. Yeah, well, they say that most scientists say that it's real. Well, that's not even the case. And most of the scientists listed in the ones that did say it were real weren't even scientists. But, hey, we don't need to argue over facts here. We don't need to argue over reality. Reality is the joke is on you. Your planet's not heating up due to man-made emissions. If that were the case, that we would already be heated up when those volcanoes are erupting all over the planet, all over the world, whichever. Don't matter. When I say planet, when I say globe, flat earth, hollow earth, concave earth, convex, it don't matter. You're going to hear a story from all different directions, who believes what. Somebody out there is feeding information, and until you get far enough away to see what shape the world is really in, what it is, then you're just going on acting on faith. And so it don't matter. I ain't never been to space, so I couldn't tell you what it looks like from up there. I can tell you what it looks like from down here. I can tell you what's going on in the world because I pay attention. But I'm talking about real science. So whatever shenanigans they pulled on us, whether they did or didn't go to the moon, whether there is or isn't a God, whether there is or isn't a one world conspiracy to control all of you and take away your rights and freedoms and your life and all that kind of stuff, hey, that's all for us to find out. But when it comes down to science, if you're gonna say that this is how things work, then don't turn around and try to go contrary to how you say things work unless you're willing to change the laws of physics, whether you're willing to change the set science that you say is what you base your deal on. So I'm not stupid. I may have been born at night, but it wasn't last night. And I'm not going to sit idly by while all these people are being lied to and ripped off by people in what they like to classify third world countries. Why is it a third world country? Is there something we don't know? Well, they steal these folks' resources. They abuse these folks. They have these folks working in slave camps, for labor, basically slave wages and such. They trash their environment and they keep them poor. They keep them in poverty. That whole entire system out there is set to keep all the people of the world in poverty, even the working poor. You and I, when we're out there working two, two people in one family trying to work to pay for medicine and fuel and energy and food and so on down the line. That's why I do what I do. Because the ridiculousness of what's going on out there, it's not real science. Real science sold to the devil and moved on. And real science become mad science because I'm mad because science is out there telling a bold-faced lie and teaching your children in school that same bold-faced lie. So that's why I do what I do. And that's why I'm going to continue to do what I do. You know, I'm not going to stop as long as I got some breath. And when I get my new lab together, I'm going to show the world some cool stuff. I'm going to show them some common sense. I'm going to show them a different, more efficient way to use energy. And it don't even scratch the surface. I spent a long time studying everything that there is to know about alternative energy. And I gave a promise to the power company. Once I got that accomplished, I'm going to share it with everybody and his brother. I'm going to share it with all their customers for free. And so when their wallet gets thin, they're going to have old Shaziz to blame for it. And that's fine, because I meant it. And I'm on my way to doing just that. I've been doing it all along. I've been sitting here pointing it all out. There it is. There it is. There it is. There's some free energy right there. Look at that. You can get that. You can turn that into fuel. You can heat water with this over here. I showed you. Chris Mareshin there was talking yesterday about using doggone dehumidifiers to pull water right out of the air. They have systems out there, industrial strength systems that do just that. And as far as the cleaning up the water, there's all kinds of what they went in the process of making biofuel. They made portion of the water filtration system, which is the biochar, the charcoal that's inside it. So even burning firewood, you're making more products. You're making ash that you can use in your gardens. You're making charcoal. You're making doggone creosote. You got extra fuel that doesn't get burnt, that gets stuck up in the stacks because of the temperature difference. It's hot outside or hot in that pipe and cold outside, so you get condensation build up and some of that sticks up there and it turns into tar. By using all these same processes, that's how they make crude oil. You can make crude oil out of anything. It doesn't matter. Crude oil out of grass, crude oil out of watermill, duckweed, crude oil out of any plant. you name it. Algae. And algae will grow extremely fast under the right conditions. We've seen this. When the farmer's doing what he's doing out there, he's turning around and basically making the water highly nutrient rich, which promotes algae growth, promotes duckweed and watermill, and your pond turns green. Golf courses obviously don't want a green pond, so what do? They go out and they use herbicides to kill off the doggone algae. Well, in the process of doing that, they not only toxify the water system there, but when they kill off that algae then turns around and promotes yet even more algae growth because it's now dead. And something got to eat it up. So, what more can I say that hasn't already been said? The joke's on you, folks. I'm going to take a quick music break and a breather and then come back and wrap this thing up here. Stay tuned. You're listening to Mad Science.
says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, I heard the ruckus too. It's called the Mad Science Show, and that's what you're listening to at People for People Radio Networks, Aziz Radio, and all those that rebroadcast out there. Thank you very much for all that. So, the ridiculousness continues. These next two little podcasts that I'm going to play right here, listen to some of the things that are said in these. But you know for a fact that I don't agree with what is being said in these next two little deals right here. But this is This is a prime example of what you have to contend with when you're trying to get the truth out to people about the reality of the world that we live in today. Listen to this. Why is the U.S. dependent on fossil?
That's what is fuel. Essential. As long as fossil fuels are the cheapest energy, then people will keep burning them. And they're only cheapest because partly they're subsidized, but mainly because they don't pay their cost to society. So the air and water pollution that they produce causes lots of health problems and about 40,000 deaths a year in the United States and about 1 million worldwide. All those health costs are borne by the public, not by the fossil fuel companies. The climate costs, which are already enormous, $50 billion for New York from Sandy, $50 billion in New Jersey, the drought last summer, these have enormous cost. Who pays those? The taxpayers, basically.
That drought alone took half a point off of GDP growth.
Yeah, so those costs are not built into the fossil fuels, and they should be. And what you should do is have this gradually rising price on carbon collected from the fossil fuel companies with 100% distributed to the public. It would spur the economy. And
what do the fossil fuel companies think about that?
You know, the fossil fuel companies, well, they are the problem in a sense, but you know, I described this to a meeting of international labor leaders, and I said, if you do this, then the marketplace will make the decisions. Instead of the government saying, let's subsidize solar panels or let's subsidize this, the government usually doesn't get things right, and it doesn't provide an incentive for all the other things that could help. And there may be things that are much better than solar panels. Yeah, so you have to just put the price on carbon, let the marketplace decide whether it's solar panels or windmills or energy efficiency or some things that we haven't thought of. But this an international labor leader stood up and said, that's libertarian, letting the marketplace. Of course, it is libertarian with a small L, but it's also populist. Because most people are going to get more in their dividend, and it gives them the opportunity to reduce their carbon footprint and make money in the process. But it's also democratic because it treats everybody equally.
Yeah. So U.S. laws are chock full of hidden loopholes for the fossil fuel industry, but this guy's talking about how he wants to make it so that the fossil fuel industry gets socked with higher carbon taxes, and so when those higher carbon taxes basically make it through that system right there, you'll get socked with higher prices at the doggone fuel pump. So the joke's on you, folks, and the ridiculousness continues. Yeah. And it's just going to kind of keep on going. Let's play this right here. It's another one that just cracks me up. UN climate change.
A stark and sobering message from an international panel of scientists assessing the impact of climate change. Their United Nations report concludes that the world must stop using fossil fuels by the end of the century or face catastrophic consequences. CCTV's Malcolm Brabant reports flooding, food shortages, and mass extinctions of plants and animals are just some of the predictions.
The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change revealed its devastating findings in the capital of Denmark, a country that's leading the world in efforts to become carbon neutral. The Danes are on target to generate 50% of their electricity from wind power by 2020. It's an example the UN Secretary General wants other nations to follow.
If we act now, immediately and decisively, we have the means to build a better and more sustainable world.
This is supposed to be a wake-up call for the world. But will the biggest polluters take heed? There's due to be a make-or-break conference in Paris next year, and there's a real drive on to come up with a legally binding accord that will commit polluters to reducing their emissions. The biggest pressure is going to be on the developing nations, whose growing economies have helped to lift people out of poverty. Now they're going to be under real pressure to face up to their environmental responsibilities. In Copenhagen, where many people commute by bicycle, some fear the rest of the world does not take the environment as seriously as Denmark does.
I'm very concerned about how things are developing in especially Asia, where I'm traveling a lot. You can really see the impact on the society there. Just by coming there for the last 3 years, there has been a big change out there.
The environment is not a high priority for the international society, I think. China, India, all these great, great countries are just emerging and have not reached the standard of living that we have. And that's only when you reach this plateau you can actually start take like small initiative steps yourself.
But some in the science community believe the world doesn't have to give up fossil fuel completely if carbon capture and storage technology is more fully developed.
We know how to re-inject CO2 underground. They've been doing it for decades. We know how to capture CO2 from power stations. We just need to put the things together, and we also need to get the policy framework in place to give companies, to give countries the right incentives to get this very expensive technology progressed and deployed.
Carbon capture is indeed among a menu of options the UN panel has laid out for action. But like all its recommendations, money is a factor, as is the need for agreement among nations with varied levels of commitment and resources. The UN Secretary General warns that there is no ambiguity in the scientists' message. Leaders must act, he said. Time is not on our side. Malcolm Brabant, CCTV, Copenhagen.
So you heard a couple examples of some ridiculousness. These brainiacs out there that probably did not pay attention in science class just don't get it. And Yolot said in the chat room, said, yes, Chaziz, I saw Mother Jones News magazine headlines on the front page, climate change is over if we pay for it. Yeah, that's his short version. But, you know, we've been paying for it all along. We've been paying for it at the fuel pumps. And the ridiculousness of it is that in those videos, you see all these people standing back there with protest signs, protesting climate change. Those are a bunch of people that did not pay attention in science class either. So, you know, I'm excited to get my new lab up and going. I'm about to get closer there. I got some few materials that I got to purchase and get things, you know, sorted out, because I want a good, nice lab where I can, you know, have everything all well organized. Because what I'm getting ready to show the world is going to blow your doors off, because it's so ridiculously simple to resolve the way that we use energy so inefficiently that... I don't get why it is. Well, I kind of do get why it is that the mainstream energy industry, which is always trying to tell you you need to be energy efficient, why they haven't realized the error of their ways for all these years. These appliances we use, they don't need near the amount of power we're shoving to them. That's why they're getting hot. You know, overseas they use 50 hertz as 60 hertz here in the United States. And obviously their appliances are probably going to last a lot longer because, you know, their hertz range is going to be a little lower, and we're pumping more, you know, higher frequencies to these deals. So it's going to actually cause our things to get hotter faster. Literally, the amount of energy that is wasted in every single household is pure ridiculousness. The internal combustion engine only being 30% efficient, the way that the fuel is being injected into the fuel system, the way that the catalytic converter reburns some of that fuel, but the majority of the fuel actually goes after your exhaust pipe because they're not getting a proper burn. That's because they don't understand basic science and basic physics and basic mechanics. Otherwise, they would have engineered these properly to begin with. By all rights, you should be using less fuel. The faster you go, the less time that you're going to have for a complete burn. And so in order to compensate, they have O2 sensors that will open up gates and shove in more air so that you have more oxygen so that you can get a stronger burn through the process. But what they should have been doing was backing that fuel off all the way. You're not losing power. You're losing fuel is what you're doing. And a properly engineered internal combustion engine wouldn't have no emissions. And even if you did have emissions, there are methods by which you can capture that before it ever even hits the atmosphere. But carbon isn't the problem. carbon is plant food. It's been plant food all along. That's why if you drive down the road and you look, there's mowers out on the side of the road more frequently than you're mowing your front lawn. That's because those plants alongside that deal picking up that carbon monoxide coming out of that exhaust is scrubbing off the carbon, turning it into sugar through a process called photosynthesis and feeding the plant. Plus giving the world back fresh oxygen. So with the trees, with the plants, with the weeds, and everything going on out there, nature's got this under control. Nature's had it under control. You're not going to see a day whenever you run out of fossil fuel, but they're going to keep on telling you that as long as you're going to keep on paying at the pump. That's the dirty little secret about the whole deal. You know, you can watch, you can control the doggone prices at the pump just by not buying fuel. And what if you had a refinery in your own yard? You didn't even have to do nothing. You take all your waste products from your house and all your waste products from mowing your lawn and raking up the leaves, and you use plasma gasification system that would turn it right back into fuel. Crude oil if you want. And then you could use that crude oil if you understand the chemistry, and you can make everything that they make. There was a dude that ran a brand new Kubota, run it off of hemp seed oil. Pure hemp seed oil. Cold pressed hemp seed oil. Worked just like diesel fuel. There are folks that go out and they get the old grease from the doggone stores, restaurants, and they turn around and they use it as fuel. There are folks that goes out and gets oil from different shops, like auto repair shops that you go do an oil change. The stuff is black, it's cruddy, and they're using that. They're mixing it in with diesel and making their diesel last longer. They're burning that in their tractors and all kinds of stuff. Where there's a will, there's a way. And if you understood a little bit about physics and science and chemistry, you can clean that oil right back up. So when you go get your oil changed, you take your old dirty oil, you take it home, you put it in a system that would be so ridiculously simple to make. You filter the stuff, you heat it up, you get all the impurities back out of it, and you turn it back into regular clean oil that you can then in turn reuse in your engine. Perfectly clean, just like the industry sold it to you to begin with. You heard whenever they were pumping stuff up out of there, they had to actually separate sand and stuff like that. Even the crude oil that comes out of the ground has impurities in it. It gets black for a reason, because it was really hot where it was at. You know, it's picked up carbon, it's picked up cruds, it picked up impurities. By the time it gets to you, it's just nice clear liquid, but it's still the same stuff. Even that cruddy oil that come out of your car, you know, it's the same exact stuff. And the same exact processes can refine that oil and turn it back into usable materials again. So, you know, it just drives me insane. So, you know, this doggone thing that, you know, we have this so-called catastrophe on our way about climate change, and you know we're going to have all these droughts and all this kind of stuff. Well, if they really believed in that, they probably wouldn't be spraying crud in the air. Of course, you know, that's a conspiracy, right? Yeah, tinfoil hat wearing nutcase, even though they say they do it on the doggone mainstream news. Yeah, now they admit to it, they do it. Okay, so what's that doing to the environment? You know, it's definitely going to be worse than it would have been if you was just driving your car back and forth to work. And even at that, if you're worried about it, you know, keep a tune-up on your car. Make it run as efficient as it's capable of, because, you know, the factory, when it first came out, they had to meet certain emission standards. And if you don't maintain the vehicle, you're going to have issues with it. And after a while, if that oil, the viscosity of that oil breaks down and you get crud up in there, it's going to eventually wear on the parts. And the next thing you know, the thing will be smoking like a freight train. And, you know, they'll call your vehicle the mosquito killer in your neighborhood. Shut it off, man. You're choking us out of here. That's the simple of it all. It's pure ridiculousness. You're not going to run out of oil. You're never going to see a day when the so-called fossil fuel industry, they might come with another name. They might rename it the new improved fossil fuel industry. We found a way to recycle it all. Well, that's funny. I've been talking about this for years. Been talking about plasma technology. Been talking about more efficient ways to use electricity. Been talking about ways that you could gasify different materials. Ways that you could recycle all different types of end up being plastic floating around in the ocean and all that kind of jazz. Mad Science has been bringing it to you for years. Go back and listen to the podcast. You might be surprised at what we talked about. But there are unlimited options as far as energy goes. There are unlimited solutions to all the problems. We can even re-engineer the internal combustion engine. We can use hydrogen technology. We can use a hydrogen hybrid electric where you use the hydrogen just long enough to charge your batteries up or whatever. You know, the technology is available. It's out there. But they have people that go out there and lobby against all this. They lobby against biofuels. They lobby against any type of, like ethanol products or whatever. You know, oh, we're going to run out of corn if you keep on using that. We don't got enough ground, all that. Well, folks, if you really paid attention to the yesterday's show about starvation, you'll find out that the government actually pays people to shove crops up under the ground so that they don't affect the market adversely when they got too many crops. Or sometimes the farmer does it because he don't have a market to sell it at. So we waste more fuel, we waste more food by processes like that. It's not the fact that we don't have an abundance. We got more food and more than enough food to feed everybody on this world. It's just the greed and the corruption and the policies of the system that keep us in the mess that we're in. And it's going to take we the people to finally get wise, we the people to finally realize that the joke has been on us and then turn that joke around on them. So all you're doing is sitting around waiting for the punchline. The punchline is, give me your wallet. All right, that's it. Give me your wallet. You're giving it to the government. Why not just give it to me? I don't want your wallet. Seriously. The fact of the matter is, if we really want to fix this, we have every solution necessary to resolve every single issue under the sun. We can make perfectly engineered machines. The way that we use our electricity, the way that we deliver our electricity, just by understanding the basics of what I've been trying to explain for years here on Mad Science. We got everything we need. The technology is available. So, it's simple. And it's not rocket science. There's a lot of folks out there that believe that the context of what I'm trying to say here on the Mad Science Show is way beyond their education level. They don't understand it. Well, they might. They might not. But the thing about it is, that's because the high-tech terminology used in the system out there is there to discourage you from being able to understand what it is that I'm talking about. So I'm trying to put it in the most simple manner as possible. I'm trying to put it in a way where the average Joe can understand how ridiculously simple it is. And so, how do we get this done? How do we get free energy to the world? Well, it's as simple as this. It's as simple as you getting with your neighbors, us taking all this research, and actually building prototypes to prove to the world that this stuff works. Stan Myers was driving around in a vehicle in the 1970s running on pure hydrogen technology. And so everybody from that point on should have known that hydrogen vehicles were possible. But yet the system traders like the Mythbusters come out there and tried to make the world believe that it was too difficult. It was, electrolysis takes too much power. You can't get enough energy back for it or whatever. They had every excuse under the sun. Regardless of the fact that people use water injection system in racing and they use water injection systems in airplane systems and farmers used to inject water into their tractors when they got them up to operating temperature and so on down the line, they didn't understand that and they couldn't get around that. But regardless of all that, they said we don't use it because it takes too much energy to produce the amount of energy you need to get your engine to run, which is a flat lie. Using the electrolysis process, it takes a lot of amperage. you got a dead short trying to separate hydrogen and oxygen. So in order to make that water more conductive, because they didn't even understand that water isn't necessarily conductive unless it has a pollutant in it, some sort of impurity, you know, such as salt. You put salt or sodium or baking soda or whatever into that water, and it makes it more conductive, which also causes it to draw more amps whenever it's actually trying to separate hydrogen and oxygen. So yeah, under those circumstances, it would be hard. Well, the Mythbusters actually did one where they actually caused an implosion from the hydrogen through the carburetor, and they said, well, maybe that's why we don't use it. Well, yeah, you didn't have no flashback arrestor, and you was putting it in the wrong way, and mixing it with all that air. What did you expect to happen? They knew what was going to happen. It's just all these folks out there, you know, they got their hands in the pockets of each other, and they're gonna play the game the way they do. The environmentalists out there have all these people who didn't pay attention in science class snowballed to the extent where they're out there protesting in the streets. Oh, we got to save the world from climate change. We only got 12 years left. Well, let's have this conversation in 12 years. The same conversation we're having right now, let's have it in 12 years. Somebody mark calendar, 12 years from now, we'll sit down and I can say I told you so. You're not going anywhere. And as far as the droughts, you know, the earth is 3/4 covered in water. We have the infrastructure to move oil from one side of the world to the next, so why don't we have the infrastructure to move water from one side to the next? Why do we have to deal with droughts? Sorry, I had to take a drink of my coffee. We don't have to deal with droughts. Heck, the technology around to make it rain, the NASA's proved that one. NASA starts up an engine running on hydrogen, and about an hour or so later, maybe even less, a rain cloud forms from the hydrogen mixing with the oxygen, producing H2O, and it rains. Imagine that. So they got a way to make it rain. So if there's a drought, move that engine over there, run the doggone thing, make it rain, water the crops. Or use this fancy old technology they call plumbing and pipe the stuff over there. So, I don't know. I'm just about, I go crazy. It gives me a headache. You know? The joke's on you. The headache's on me. You know, I go to the fuel pump. I see the prices there. I know the prices are ridiculous. I've watched them go up since I was a child. But the fact of the matter is, with a refinery in your backyard that you could design, it ain't no different than what those college students explained. It was a gasifier system. They used them back in World War I, World War II, and probably still used them all along, never told nobody about it. You're burning firewood to run an internal combustion engine. And here's another thing. If that fuel is coming out of the exhaust, if it's only 30% efficient, go look it up. Look up how efficient the doggone internal combustion engine is. So what could you run on the fuel that's actually coming out of the tailpipe? Because the other percentage, if it's only 30% of your fuel actually gets used to get you down the road, and the rest of it goes out your tailpipe minus whatever the catalytic converter can reclaim and send back up to the intake. The catalytic converter isn't nothing more than a reburner for waste fuel. That's all it is. And it gets hot. Really hot. Those things will stay hot for a long time after you shut your vehicle off. That's why they tell you don't park over dry grass with your car, because you'll start your car on fire. You start the grass on fire because it's hot. But hey, never mind me. I paid attention in science class. And so, you know, with all that said, what are we going to do about it? I'll tell you what I'm going to do about it. I'm going to finish my lab, and I hope you all stay tuned, because when I get my lab done, I'm going to have live streams on Twitch. I'm going to have live streams on YouTube, possibly even Facebook if I can do that as well. And I'm going to be doing live radio broadcasts at the same exact time to show everybody and explain to them in graphic detail of exactly what it is that they're seeing, how it's going to be beneficial, showing them a different way to use electricity that I've showed in many of the videos that I've done, that try to point out something and hopefully kick on a light bulb. I tell you, if you see an idea and you like that idea, take it and run with it, expand on it, and so on down the line. An idea is just an idea until you do something with it. But, you know, it's time for us, we the people, to get our act together. It's time for us to stop being basically shafted by the system. The governments ain't going to care because they're making money. You know, and there's all kinds of loopholes in there for the fuel industry, the fossil fuel, the so-called dinosaur fuel, which doesn't exist. But nonetheless, given the devil is due, they get extra subsidies from the government. And they get to charge you at the pump. And it's just like the housing crisis that we saw, where the banks got to foreclose on the houses, they got to resell the houses, but a lot of people didn't know that when you took that loan out, they had an insurance policy that if you didn't pay that loan, they were going to get paid. So they got paid from you whatever you paid them. They got paid when they foreclosed it. They got paid when they resold it. They got another insurance policy. They have a scam going for a scam going for a scam. Everything that you do makes them money, including going to the fuel. And even when you stay home, you're still going to watch the TV. You're still going to watch their news broadcast. You're still going to listen to their propaganda. And you're still going to buy the lie. And when you do finally get upset because they tore your heart apart because, you know, the planet's going to die, and you're telling all the kids that we only got 12 years left to live because of fossil fuel, and we got to get rid of fossil fuel, they're out there, they're protesting, and they got their signs, their wooden sticks, paper signs saying save the trees and so on, down the line, and nothing gets done. Absolutely nothing. Where are the environmentalists here at the Mad Science Show? Where are all the scientists coming here to debunk what I said? Why haven't they received the challenge? When I threw down the gauntlet and I challenged them to step forward, to step up to the plate, let's talk about this thing. They haven't, and they ain't going to either. Because if you talk out against the so-called climate change, then you're a heretic on their side of the fence. And that means you're not going to get the funding that you need. Well, I say we have the answers. I'm going to prove that we have the answers. I'm going to show the world the solutions. And when it's all said and done, 12 years from now, whenever they said that we were supposed to be doomed, I'm going to say, I told you so. You're going to see these technologies come out. You're going to see free energy come out. But it ain't going to be free to you. It's gonna be some sort of charge, like the charge for you to breathe. You breathe, you exhale CO2. The plants scrub that and they make sugar and give you back fresh oxygen. You have a symbiotic relationship with nature. But they want to charge you a carbon tax. And even if they're not charging it directly to you, and they're charging it to the companies for whatever emissions they push out, that is going to translate onto your bill, whether it be electric, gas, or whatever. That's how it works. The system is rigged against you, and until you realize that, the joke's on you. It's that simple. Folks, you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. I hope that you found this interesting today. I hope that you take and investigate some of what I said, and I hope you take it serious. You know, the joke is a joke till people have to die in war, and that's what's happening. People are out there fighting over resources that are incredibly abundant. You're never going to see a day when fossil fuel runs out. Never. They might change the name of it, but it's still going to be the same. They're still going to be making plastic. They're still going to be making all these different products, perfumes, everything, all these different types of petroleum products. You look it up. Go back and follow that black muck all the way through the process, and you find out what's all involved and what's made from it. In the process of burning firewood, you produce more products. So you haven't even got rid of it. According to their science, energy could neither be created nor destroyed, so where does it go? When you burn that firewood, all you did was change the molecular structure and the chemistry, and you made more products. You made fertilizer, you made lye soap, you made all kinds of stuff. And you made more fuel. So, with that said, you be the judge. Been listening to Mad Science, folks. Peace and love. Stay tuned for the Music with Kara hour.
Ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh,
one ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss, they're puny.
Hmm, puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Didn't that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this? You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Ah! Ah! Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.